With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cowboy. Cowboy.
Well, I'm packing up my game and I'ma head out west, where real women come equipped with scripts and fake breasts. Find a nest in the hills, chill like Flint. Buy an old drop top, find a spot to pimp. Then I'm a kid, rock it up and down your block. Go with a bottle of scotch and watch lots of crotch.
Nedge, I woke up today feeling wistfully nostalgic for, I don't know, what I feel is now a bygone era. I don't know if it's because I've been watching a lot of your clips and trying to get into the headspace for today, or whether it's just I'm at that age where responsibility is expected of you.
Yeah.
Maturation is the supposed social order of conduct. And I just kind of feel like with the stuff that we'll get into with, you know, Balls of Steel and everything that you've done over the years, and I guess just culture as a more loose thing. Back in our day, let's say, not to be the two old guys sat on the balcony, Wattler and Staldoff from the Muppets looking down. But I feel like the world has definitely changed. And obviously, you know, as you get older, you're changing within it. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like as a guy who's, you know, kind of had the crazier, younger, wild years, that part of you does still miss that?
So as we sit here and I edge towards a significant birthday.
Is it the big 4-0?
Let's not talk about that. I agree. I know what you're saying. I agree with you. I've had a lot of fun, you know, and I've always maintained this sort of crazy persona. But yeah, I've got two kids now. I've got businesses. But yeah, I'm still, I can't help it. Yeah. You know, I'm still.
You are who you are.
Yeah, there's still this uncharted territory. There's things I want to do. There's things I want to film. There's things I want to produce. And they all sort of fit in that. God, has he really done that? Kind of, I guess.
Well, Pritchard's at that stage at the moment, I think, with his vegan stuff that he's launched, you know, and it's kind of the ultimate redemption story, really, is, you know, Wild Man to Iron Man was the name of the documentary that he made.
Yep.
And he's managed to cultivate that passion alongside, you know, the crazy past and make it work within this kind of context of, oh, I've turned my life around, but still I'm me.
And I've massive admiration for Pritch. You know, I've known him for a long time, as I know you have as well. And yeah, he's done that remarkably smoothly. And, you know, I spoke to him recently about doing some live stuff and he just said, you know, Nedge, this is a really terrible
impression. This is really good.
I don't want to do that anymore, you know. That was more Tom Jones, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's Pritchard here.
The green grass of home.
Yeah. And I completely understood what he said. He's, you know, and I think he mentioned it on your podcast as well, you know, with him. Do an audience want to stand there watching a 45-year-old bloke shove things up his arse?
Yeah.
And, I mean, the answer to that is probably yes for some of these guys, but he doesn't want to do it.
But there's something slightly depressing about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the audience and the performer.
And I completely understand that. And, you know, we used to tour sort of, you know, not together, but, you know, we were doing circuits at the same time. And I completely get what you're saying.
Who were you touring with? Or were you going out solo?
Well, it was Nedge's Urban Sports Live,
right,
after all, you know, the ball stuff.
Yep.
And they would be out doing the Sanchez stuff or pitching a Daint and we'd see, it's weird because, you know, you'd see the names. Oh, we're in Cardiff, they're in Swansea, you know, all this kind of thing. You've done it yourself.
The same kind of venues as well, because they're not quite like music venues. They're those like weird, almost leisure centre style or like bars.
Just a lot of bars. Yeah. And it would be, you know, you'd see your name up there, because I would just turn up, you know, with my Nathan, who DJs and tour manages. This is the musician guy. We'll come to him later on, I'm sure. And they'd be like, Ned from Balls of Steel, Wheelstone Raider. Remember that guy?
No.
So like the geezer was at the football match going, you want some? I'll give it you. Remember him?
No.
You don't remember him?
No.
He was like, you know, internet famous for 5 minutes, whatever. You know.
Right, so he would have been one of the first like internet sensations.
Yeah, that's got to be at least 7-8 years ago maybe now. Guys like that, you know.
Making it work. Because that's the thing as well. When you strike that, you want to keep it going, don't you? Because you know that stuff like that doesn't necessarily have the longevity of a band.
Yeah, absolutely.
So whilst there's fire in the or iron in the fire, you've got to keep it going, right?
Well, we're all milking the cow, aren't we, to a certain extent? But, you know, we're at an age now and certainly still now, I would say, where you can blow up on, you know, you can go viral and then, oh, you're something. You know, these guys are going viral and then they're being put in front of us on celebrity reality shows and the like, and I just find it...
Well, without any discernible skill or talent.
Well, you said it, not me, but absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and this is like, coming back to what you said initially from the off, it's bizarre, isn't it? It really is. It's kind of hard to get your head around. I mean, these, you know, what are we on now? Zed, is it?
Yeah, it's something like that.
They must be just like, okay, this is...
Well, they like drinking is unfashionable. You know, it's good. It's cool to be healthy because I guess they all want to present this perfect image of their lives via Instagram and Snapchat and all of that. So it's not necessarily about having fun. Like when we were kids, you were offline. Like the second you left your parents' house, and let's start there with your childhood. Is, you know, you'd go out for the night, and your phone, if you had one, would be in your pocket because all you would do with that is call and text, and you weren't filming your mates drunk like passed out on the floor. And thank God.
Yeah,
because all that footage would just be out there, wouldn't it?
When we first started, you know, being teenage boys, whatever you want to call it, there was a few of us who had phones. I didn't have a phone. And it was before, you know, this is what I mean, people don't believe it. It was before you had cameras and all that kind of thing. My mate had this big brick phone that he had for years. Just like, he couldn't even fit in his pocket, you know? But I mean, some of that stuff, is best left. Although I'd like to watch, you know, some of the...
For your own personal enjoyment.
Yeah, but God,
we used to film a lot on mini DV tapes.
Yeah.
And I still have probably about 35 hours of raw, unedited, stupid stuff of me and my mates, you know, recreating the kind of stuff that you would see in Sanchez and Jackass and all of that. And I own that and I have that, but thankfully it's not anywhere online.
Well, we were doing... I mean, there is that too. I mean, we were doing that kind of thing, me and my pals, way before, you know, it's before Sanchez and Jackass, and I actually remember my parents went on holiday, which was always a bad move. I had all the boys sitting around, and we were sitting there with beers and stuff, and we were like 17-ish, left college, you know, leaving college. I'm going, right, guys, and I sort of had in my head this picture of, you know, like I'd be the lead guy in this sort of nutty troupe of
like a Johnny Knoxville type,
exactly like Johnny Knoxville. And I was saying, well, look, you've got this guy here who, you know, he's always sick. You've got this guy here who, you know, passes out. And you see where I'm going with this.
Yeah, and each character starts to form.
Yeah, and there's, you know, this fellow here used to train surf, one of our mates, who's no longer with us, bless him, you know. And it wasn't through anything like this. He used to train surf, which was something I only...
Well, so jump on the top of a train and pretend to ride it.
Tube trains, yeah.
On the tube trains?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Bless mayhem. And I'm just thinking, you know, there's something here, there's something marketable here. We just need to take a camera out. And they're all going, no, it's never going to, no one's going to put that on TV. What are you talking about? I'll never forget it. We were, 17. So it was a few years before.
So Jackass. Like late 90s, mid 90s?
After that. So coming up to, so it would have been, BAM would have been doing.
CKY.
Yeah, around that time. Maybe a little bit before that, actually. And, you know, my parents are like, you know, because I wanted to be involved with media or something. I didn't know exactly what from a really early age. And my dad was like, you're not gay. You're not Jewish. You're not a woman. Forget it. That was. Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I'm an Essex boy, but only
there you go.
Loughton and the surrounding area. We've now moved further out. But yeah, so East London is very familiar to me.
Where we sit now.
Yeah, where we sit. Yeah, loads of...
Were you like a skateboarder kid? Were you like a kind of proper like Essex lad?
No, not at all.
What was your group of friends?
I don't know if you could label us. I had a lot of skater friends. I had, you know, there was a few Essexy kind of lads, but yeah. we just called ourselves the Nutbags.
And that the was, Nutbags, brilliant.
The Nutbags. And it was kind of like, I don't know if you could pigeonhole us. I never...
Everyone was a character.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to that, I mean... If they had only listened to me and if we had taken a camera out, because I didn't have a camera, you know, I didn't have anything like that. My parents just didn't get me one, or they were more expensive then as well. But, God, that would have worked, I think. You know, at least got us into a position where we had a tape and we could have taken it in, and who knows, you know. But so I always think about that, because it was very similar to what, obviously, Pritch and, you know, the guys, the Jackass guys did. But, you know.
Well, it was so organic, I think. Less so for the Jackass guys, it seemed to me like a very, and I always say this, but I say it with respect, a contrived setup.
Yeah.
They clearly saw all the pieces. They're like, Bam's doing that thing. Big Brother are doing their thing. We've got this guy, Knoxville, who can front it. All these other characters that can help bring it to life. And it was like a boy band that they assembled and then went to MTV. But whereas with Pritch and Dayton, it was more like they were just being idiots with their mates, like yeah. you were, but without the
absolutely.
Camera.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then it just spiraled for them, didn't it?
And I guess, you know, maybe Balls wouldn't have happened without that. I don't know. You know, Balls are still was, I don't know. Maybe it would, I don't know. But what a series that could have been.
The Nutbags.
With those guys. The Nutbags, yeah. we always used to say it. And then, but most of those guys now, you know, city jobs and.
Yeah, yeah.
And they still misbehave occasionally.
On the straight and narrow to.
But yeah.
A large extent.
I just can't, I mean, I tried that. Like I said, my dad was, you know, Not, I wouldn't say unsupportive, you know, but
he didn't understand that world.
Well, he knew I was bonkers, right? Because I always have been a bit, you know. Whatever you want.
Where does that come from? Have you ever thought or found out?
Well,
or...
I don't know. So I'm adopted, you see. So, I think that's you always kind of feel, and I've spoken to other adopted people about this, and they haven't always necessarily agree with this, but you kind of feel a bit feral,
a bit out of step.
Well, just you know, you just. Who am I, sort of, you yeah, know, yeah. stuff. I don't want to get too serious to you, but...
That's what, dude, we can, you know, we can do the full spectrum of moods on this podcast.
Yeah, and so you always kind of feel, and maybe that was my way of, I always think about this, you know, my way of sort of coping with, especially going to school where I didn't know anyone, both times I hardly didn't know anyone. So you just, and I've always acted the clown, I've always been the guy acting, you know...
Is that because of, like, wanting to be accepted and feel
I think it's that, rather
appreciation
than be and... the centre of attention, which sort of, I don't think that's the main thing, you know, that... wanting to be loved and the fame, I think, and I've spoke to a lot of people about this, like, that doesn't really interest me, you know. It was never about that. Not that I consider myself a celebrity or, you know, whatever, but just I enjoy making people laugh, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And that was a real...
Well, know, it's a great thrill and a great rush.
Yeah.
And I've spoke to a few comedians about it who will say that standing on a stage, and, you know, in your case, the stage would be the world, the streets, yeah. and just... like exploding out this energy and joy and kind of bringing people in and, you know, just seeing the smiles and the laughter and the joy on people's faces.
It just has always given me a kick, yeah, massively. And still to this day, you know, it's becoming, you know, like I said, we didn't have a camera at that stage. And then, I mean, again, we'll come to this, but, you know, we did get a camera, started filming some sketches is where it went onto that. And then obviously with the stuff that's been on telly and online, you know, it's massively satisfying to create something.
And well, that's the other element of it as well, is there's a performance element, but then there's also, if you're making video, the actual creative process putting together a sketch
really
or a bit.
That. Yeah. I you know, I didn't start off doing the wind-up stuff till later. It was sketches, because my heroes, you know, Harry Enfield.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Back in the day, and Vic Reeves.
Love Vic and Bob.
Yeah, absolutely. But when they started out, you know, I had a TV in my room from young, and I was obsessed with this. I used to get the TV Times, whatever you call it, you know, What's on TV it was, actually.
Yeah.
Like a complete loser. I'd circle the up-and-coming comedy, and I was obsessed, you know? And I used to video stuff. See, this is what I'm talking about. It's how old we are now.
Yeah.
I used to video, and it would be, like, you know, alphabetical, and my dad again, what are you doing? I remember once Bottom came on, and I was young here, and I said, please don't forget to record Bottom, because I'm so nuts with this stuff. It had to be and he missed the start of it, and I had a complete meltdown. But
so you're like dating in that sense. He's real OCD as well.
Yeah. I think, you know, everything's
it's
so...
It's part of that video editing kind of creative brain, I think. If you're more on the digital side, like I think if you're an artist, it doesn't really work because you have to be scatty. And but I think if you're like a kind of a videographer or an editor or even a director... That really serves those crafts.
I mean, technically, I'm not great, but
you know what you want. You got the vision.
I think just the OCD stuff in general for me was another way maybe of coping. You know, being adopted, and you know, my parents were a bit older and stuff, and because I was always acting a tit or whatever you want to call it, trying to make people laugh. You get people that love that, and then you get some people that hate that. So,
people that hate it, did you get a thrill and a rush out of that as well?
No, not really. I just think, you know, like, sorry, man. You know, just
you feel bad, guilty.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about kids at school. You know, the older ones would be like, you know, you're getting beats and stuff.
Yeah.
When you're just trying to make people laugh. But I can understand it, you know.
It's not for everyone, that style of humour, is it?
No.
I remember I used to do, in break times at college, we used to basically fuck people's cars up by decorating them in whatever we could find. So. Parking stickers was one. We covered a person's car in, like, you know, 1,000 of these parking permit stickers, stuff like that. You toilet paper.
Yeah.
And you'll get this one faction of people who love it, and then the person whose car it is obviously fucking hates it.
Well,
and then
and
then you fall out with them, and I would actually fall out with friends over these pranks that I would pull on them, and I would feel bad, but I'd be like, come on, it's just a laugh. But some people just don't like it.
I'm trying to think of the stuff that, you know.
You must have some good stories from the school years.
God, I mean, primary school was... I was just hyper, you know, they couldn't work out what was going on. You know, this kid's not right. And you hear it now, ADHD was what they said.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing then, was it?
No, not really. And you sort of feel...
Any form of mental deficiency wasn't... It was just... He's weird.
Yeah, and I felt like that. And I felt sort of, not ostracized, but, you know, just, oh, yeah, he's always in trouble. My parents are going nuts, you know. Like, I just wasn't stimulated. I was bored. And that into secondary school, I was, again, like, I started off playing the full from the off because I didn't know anyone and it was completely out of my comfort zone. And then, yeah, it got nuttier and nuttier, really. You know, I remember once when I was a bit older, maybe 14, 15, we had an own clothes day, you know. It's a pretty good school, posh school, uniform.
Yeah.
So I came in a dress.
Really? Right? Yeah. Amazing.
And and they like called me in to see the headmaster. Like, right, if you don't change out of that now, you're going to be expelled, right?
Wow. You see, now if someone did that, they would hopefully, you'd think, accept that as that's just what that person wants to do to feel comfortable.
Yeah, whatever.
Different times.
Yeah, but see, I anticipated this move, right? So
you knew they would be fucking livid.
I brought two dresses, so I changed into the other dress, right? One of my mum's, you know, like, whatever it was, late 90s floral pieces.
Yeah. A Laura Ashley
and
garment.
Then, oh, God knows. And then I went to PE, playing basketball. And climbing this rope, and I remember this kid was like, "Stare, like, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Stop looking at my dress." But they couldn't do the thing, so I changed. You see, but there's plenty of that kind of thing, you know. In fact, I asked my pals yesterday, and I said, "You know, have you got anything you can remember from school that I can actually say?" And like you hid in the cupboard at the back of the classroom for the entire double lesson, which is like would have been an hour and 20, stripped off, and then got. Because I was opening the door, you know, so they could see. And then when the teacher was, and then at the end, I got my clothes back on. And then at the end, I just walked out and said, there's someone in there to the teacher. And he was like, what? But how he didn't know, because I remember they were all just cracking up the whole time. Looking. Yeah, he must have known. I think they knew. They just didn't want to. But I was always doing stuff like that. Just
quite well thought out jokes, though, right?
Well, yeah,
not
I mean,
just
you
your
like
average prank.
So. There's some other stuff that's just, you know, stupid and disgusting. But yeah, you know, like. Just being an idiot most of the time. Just trying to entertain, I suppose, because it's so mundane, isn't it? Life is so mundane, and school was so, and it was quite a regimented place, and I didn't fit in. My dad wanted me to have a good education. It was a private school. I met some really cool people there, some friends, you know, that are still dear to me now, but it was...
The day-to-day life can be quite black and white in those environments, and you just wanted to splash a bit of colour in the mix,
you know,
right?
I think the education system, you know, it's... Well, did you enjoy it?
Well, I spoke to the famous illustrator, going to name drop here, Ralph Steadman, who did all the Hunter S. Thompson covers, about the art of cartoon illustration.
Yeah.
Because I love cartoon drawing at school. And I remember there was one module we were doing where we were having to recreate Picasso pieces. And yeah. I did the Picasso, famous Picasso piece with the woman with the slanted face in like a cartoon style.
Okay.
And I was given an effort. My teacher failed me because she was like, cartoon is not art.
Whoa.
So instantly then I'm like, okay, well, I'm not an artist now because that's the only style
this
I can
what
do.
I mean,
and
know.
It just beats out your, and same thing with music and stuff. You know, if ever we did a project, I'd try and do something that was punk and exciting. And they'd be like, no, it has to be the Beatles or the Police.
Yeah,
and
what I mean.
They beat out your creativity, don't they? Because it's like, here's the curriculum. Here's the rigid format. Here's what we have to stick to. And if you show any signs of deviating from that, you're actively discouraged.
That's what it's designed to do. We're all just, you know, supposed to be on this carousel, treadmill, whatever you want to call it. You know, this, we're supposed to stay within those lines. And I know you, and certainly, you know, I can empathize with that. And I'm not that type of person. So still, you know, now, and I've just try and maintain that, although we're getting older, I'm still going to misbehave. I'm still
going to
do this.
Young at heart.
Well, like, what?
Yeah, man.
And like, my parents just go, you know, they're getting older. And like, when are you going to grow up? This is me, and I'm not going to grow up. And I'm quite happy making people laugh as long as people want to see this stuff.
If you can make it work, man. I mean, Ralph Steadman, to go back to him, he's 82 years of age and he's never grown
Fantastic,
up. He's spent his whole life just drawing cartoons and misbehaving.
This is a message to everybody out there. You know, you don't have to. You know, you do your best at what, you know, you need to do, but there's always room for a bit of individuality, and it's just about doing it right, I suppose. And if you get the break, you know, like a lot of us have been lucky to get the breaks with Balls, and, you know, I've travelled the world doing comedy and stuff. I've been really lucky. It's fantastic.
And it's the greatest
and it ain't
feeling
over.
On
earth. Absolutely. To think, you know, like at school, I'm getting told off constantly. He's never going to amount to anything.
Were you that person as well that was always told you'll never amount to anything? You're a waste of time. You're a waste
just
of space.
Could do better. It was always could do better. It was like, well, you know, you could do better because
can all do
you're
better.
You're teaching me something I'm not really that interested in, and I'm obviously not simulated. Isn't that, you know, to the same extent?
Isn't the blame partially yours?
Yes.
Sir?
You know, like, you can't force someone to be interested, but I mean, do we really care about chemistry? You know, does it affect me now? I don't know. It's a funny question.
It's an interesting debate there, isn't it? How much do you actually use from what you learn at school in later life?
Well, this is the whole thing. I mean,
because for me, I always kind of lean towards the humanities,
you?
And so English, history, and they're still the areas of interest for me. But I know what you're saying, things like algebra and chemistry. And
well, I think math is important, obviously, but when you're talking about that. But that's what I mean, it's designed to do that. So everyone's the same. You're all, you know, you're going the same way. Get a job, you know, pay your taxes, die, piss off.
Mm-hmm. How old are your kids now?
8 and 5.
Okay, so they haven't started like proper school, homework, all of that yet.
Like, yeah, it's, I mean, it gets quite...
Or do they start them young these days?
It's ridiculous. My boy is a bright spark, you know, so I tell him, you know, don't feel like you're within these parameters. You can achieve whatever you want. I'm very much, so I say that to him every night. I'm proud of you, you know. I don't want him to feel that way because I felt like that. And then you end up rebelling, you know. Then
that's
that
where
kid,
it comes,
you know,
from.
Stay
yeah.
away from
anger
him.
And resentment.
Well, yeah. And I, like I say, being adopted, you know, I felt that anger. And I don't, I know my kids, you know, they have their moments. My little girl, she's gorgeous, but she's but yeah, the family's good. It's important, obviously, you know. And that's what I mean. It's that when the kids come along, it changes. The dynamic changes. But again, going back to your initial sort of intro to this, can you still be yourself and misbehave? Of course you can. Do you know what I mean? It changes a bit, but I'm a comedian, a prankster, an idiot. That's always going to, even though I've been, you know, filming and creating stuff as much as I would like, because we've got, you know, I've got businesses and stuff now, and obviously the family life, it's still there. There's still things going on. You know, I'm still...
How would you, if you had to, define what you do? Comedian, prankster?
I think I'm a comedian. I'm a comedy writer and performer. Because when all this was going on, you know, I'm sitting there at 17, whatever it is, thinking, guys, come on. And they're all getting their suits on and going. I lasted 2.5 days in an office job. My dad bought me a suit after I left college. And then that was, you know, hit and miss. College was just, again...
What did you study at college?
I did media.
So was that scratching that itch? Was that giving you
what
you wanted?
Yeah, and I was really interested by that. And I was interested in media studies, and it was geography, which was just another thing, and business studies was a complete disaster. but Yeah, after that, you know, I came out, I was like, right, I definitely want to do something media, and I want to film, and I was already writing ideas then, you know, not hitting cameras such, just sketches.
Yeah.
You know, being brought up on. And I remember at school, it was about, must have been 11 or 12, a couple of pals actually, separately of each other, you know, we would get, because they did have video cameras, and I've just never been very technical. I couldn't really work them. I was like, I've got these ideas, can we, and I want to actually see this stuff, but God, my mate Gus, yeah, he's got a video of us just acting stupid, you know, but like, we would sit around with his family and they were laughing and stuff. I'm thinking, I like this. That was the first kind of
first
time.
Taste, you know, of an, yeah, audience. And
there was another mate of mine, Toby, and we used to film sketches like the Harry Enfield stuff at his house, and bless his granddad, right, had had a stroke, I think. So he would just sit, and because like, of my OCD, right, and because of I am, I was, well, he has to like have a character.
yeah, we've got to write him into this.
So it's like, okay, so, you know, that's how mad it was. But yeah, and then subsequent from that, I you know, I was writing comedy at college, and I went traveling and things like that. And
did you ever try stand up?
I've not done stand up per se, but I would like to. But I'm much more comfortable. Even this, like, I'm not nervous, but I prefer doing stuff as characters, and that's what I would do at school. You know, impressions of the teachers and make stuff up. You know, just.
Do you feel like if you're in character, you're fearless? You got no
it helps.
Worries or concerns.
It helps.
Because I think when people watch...
Massively.
And we won't jump ahead too far here, but when people watch your stuff, particularly from the Balls of Steel era, as I just said to you outside, like, the fucking balls on you to do some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But do you get into that headspace where you're like, this isn't me now, this is this character, and then that gives you that push
yeah.
to take it as far as you can in the interest of comedy and getting the end result that you want?
I think
rather than worrying about your own personal safety.
I don't know. Like, yeah. Well, there's certainly, you know, when you're wearing a wig or you're doing an accent, like, because my other characters, more recent stuff, you know, like Annie the Tranny, we'll come to, and David Hawk and those guys. You have, there's certainly, like, well, it's not me, it's them. You know, and a lot of guys will identify with that, I'm sure, you know, performers. And but with the cowboy hat was, you know, and someone actually said, we were filming one of the sketches in Australia, and he said, and the runner or assistant producer or something, I put the hat on, he said, your whole body changed when you put that, like, you know what I mean?
So it's, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, the whole physicality of you, everything.
Yeah, that's what he said, and it was quite a shrewd observation, because we were just about to shoot, and I was like, yeah, so yeah, we'll do some beers tonight, and then, you know, or maybe tomorrow we can go down to Opera House or something. He's like, oh, we're ready, and he's your whole, you know, and I guess you're right, and it's a wonderful thing, you know? But yeah, you're right in saying that. I think there is a certain element of you. Okay, well, you've just fucking chucked a burger at someone. You've just done this, you've done it. Maybe it goes back to the childhood stuff. Well, that wasn't me, you know? Because you kind of feel like that as a kid when I used to play
possessed.
Up. Well, it is kind of, yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe it is, you know? And like they say, you split personalities. I mean, I'm quite good at that. Like, I could do like four or five when we've shot stuff. I did an online series for Comedy Central, and we were jumping from thing to thing, and I'm quite easy. I find that relatively easy to sort of jump from, you know,
accent, mode,
yeah, but it helps when I've got the, like, if you had like a load
just
of props,
just anything
here,
yeah, just a prop then that helps differentiate
that improvisation kind of thing,
like get those shades on there now, proper Terry Tibbs style.
Yeah, but don't say that.
Oh, now I've fucked you up. I'm not. And because the world looks yellow through them as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, what I would like to say right now, you see what I mean? Like, just,
yeah.
Love, you said Terry Tibbs.
I fucked you up.
For the benefit of the listeners, they are very Terry Tibbs.
Yellow aviators.
But yeah, that kind of thing.
It's all you need, isn't it?
But and in fact, people say, oh, have you got a character? And I need, like, it really helps. But the David Hock, I don't know how much of that you've seen, but this is like kind of the way I wanted to go with this new character, because David Hock's like a nutty news reporter. We've done some stuff on telly with him for the news channels, which Russia Today wanted him, which was
really
great. Yeah, and we did some, and I love doing him now. I think the urban cowboy, you know, again, we need to talk about balls and stuff, I know, but there's an element of what Pritch said, you know, you're standing on stage with a fucking firework up your ass at 45 years old. Is it tragic to be chucking food at people, you know, as you get older, into your 40s or whatever, or is it still fucking funny?
I think it's a little of column A and a little of column B, isn't it? I think.
I think people, you know, people
there's,
want to
there's
see
still
it.
A demand and a want for it.
I did a poll on Twitter and said, what shall I film next? And it was like 90% Urban Sports. But, you know,
yeah.
But you can't.
It's like when a band has a hit single. It's the same thing. When you've got that one thing that is your trademark expression, your trademark statement, and everyone knows you for that and loves you for that. And it's just whether or not you can be at peace with that and continue to do it. Because there's some bands who are like, yeah, this is obviously our biggest hit. Of course we'll play it every night and I'll still enjoy playing it every night. And then there's those other people that are like, I fucking hate this song. It's bought everything I own, but inside me, because I want to be recognised for more than this, and I struggle with that.
I mean, if I was a multimillionaire like some of those guys, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But not, that's not necessarily the case.
The Urban Cowboy hasn't bought you a mansion.
No, but I think if you're on TV or anything, people like, not so much now, maybe, because there's a lot of TV channels. But, you know,
yeah, back when there was only four and then five. Like, if you were on TV,
I'm not that fucking old.
Well, we were when we were growing up. It was fucking. I mean, I never had Sky or anything. So for me, it was always BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, Channel 4.
That's right.
And then Channel 5. And that was that was all I grew up with.
Yeah, that's what the TV guy thing. That's what I mean, because there was, you know, there's so much selection now, but. Yeah, I'm not. You know, maybe if I was mega rich, I'm not bothered. Like, people come up and they.
Do you get recognised?
Yeah, you still get recognised. But it's, I can't ever remember anyone saying anything negative. Not that that's an invitation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think anyone listening to this far in is now going to find you and throw a burger at you.
Yeah. No, that they're always like, mate, you know, you're hilarious. Or, I mean, some of the, when we did the live shows, you know, at the university, he's like, oh, you were my childhood hero. That kind of, I'm like, hang on a minute. Well, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. If
dude, I've spoke to so many people about chatting to you today. Yeah. And I fucking love that show. It's a very fondly remembered character.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And it's definitely the best remembered character of that show, without any disrespect to any of the others on there.
No, I would agree with
you. they all brought their unique thing.
Yeah.
And I, you know, loved what Tim did on it. And
yeah.
But I think the fan favourite was always definitely
whoop, whoop, whoop. Yeah. And I mean that, and it's interesting that we're talking about sort of catchphrases and stuff like that, because
that's what made it, I think, right? As well as what you did, it's that simple hat and the whoop, whoop, whoop.
The Tourette-y kind of things, because, man, I was always saying nutty stuff, and the whoops was just something I was doing, you know? So it would be like, it would punctuate. Right, let's get 8 points, mate. Whoop, you know?
Yeah.
And then that, when we were filming, I did a screen test, because I knew the producer, again, we were jumping all over the place, but I knew it was going to be like that. see, it's messing with me OCD, see?
It's exactly the same as Dayton.
Is that right?
Yeah, exactly the same.
So, what were we talking about?
The whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, so
you're on the screen test.
The producers kind of said, oh, I'm not sure about that. I said, no, trust me, you know, you need the catchphrase, you know. And then it just sort of went from there. They weren't sure. And then when we went into the studio, they were like, I want you to come out and just be yourself. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So it was a bit, I always found that a bit weird when we come out and present the thing, you know, with Mark. And I was much more uncomfortable doing that.
Really, at the end, yeah.
100%. Like,
yeah, it did seem weird, because it almost breaks that fourth wall, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Shows that it's this stage thing.
I like the buzz and the excitement of like, the audience there, and it was great because they'd watch it live, you know, when you could judge.
Yeah.
I love that scene. That's the whole reaction thing, you know, making people laugh. But also, you know, I was much more nervous doing that than chucking burgers, jumping on people's back, which people don't really understand. But I don't know. Weird, isn't it?
Had you done anything on TV before that point?
No, not as such. The guys I was writing with, so towards after college, I mean, I went to college, then I sort of mucked about a bit, did a few jobs, did some running work and stuff for TV companies. I was doing a lot of work at 3 Mill Studios, which is not too far from me, right? Myland. And just bits like that, you know, odd jobs, you know, helping out. I was only 18, whatever, just nutcase,
getting,
you know,
the tea,
trouble.
Doing all of that, yeah,
all that. And then a couple of the guys who I went to school with, I met in a pub, and they were saying they just done like film studies, whatever it was, you know, at uni, and they said, what have you been doing? I said, oh, I've done this, I've done that, I've been traveling, and I said, I've been writing some sketches. They're like, oh yeah, nutting edge, what's he done? And I said, well, let's meet up for a beer and I'll show you and we'll catch up. Like, okay, so we did that, and they were like, these are actually quite funny. So we started writing together, me, Sam and John, Sam, Vincent and John Brackley. And it became quite clear that this was something that we really enjoyed doing and that there might be some legs in this, you know. Again, like that feeling of 12 when I was shooting the stuff with my little mates from school. It's just like the excitement of creating something, you know.
With other people as well. That's the one thing I miss the most about doing what I do. And this is what I love the most, is when I get to actually sit down with someone else. Because there's nothing better than brainstorming and creating with other people and collaborating in that way.
Absolutely. And we would sit there just all day in the pub, and it was a bottle of Grolsch, it was a quid. I mean, that's how long ago it is. And we would just like, so you'd have like a tenner, you'd have 10 bit, and we would just write and write and write, and we would be falling off our chairs, you know, laughing with the sketches. They're just sketches. And we started thinking, well, let's film these sketches, because John's parents had like an amateur dramatics, like a loft full of costumes, so my eyes lit up, you know, all this nutty stuff. And again, the wigs and hats would go on. Let's do this. Where the character Sneezer, just this stupid, like, you know, it's me dressed as an old man and Sam would be the old lady. This is on video or DVD somewhere. And it'd just be, you know, you know, like, so they would never, sneeze would never come, or just absolutely stupid.
Every other release bar the sneeze.
Yes, absolutely. And it was something we filmed loads of them, and then we started, you know, there's some sketches now which I still think are pretty funny. Like same footage guy. So we filmed this guy that was getting ready to go out with his mate, and he's like shaving. Oh, you know, you fancy Nat, don't you? All this stuff. Yeah, I'll fancy Nat. Come on, we're going to be late. Taxi's here. All right, mate. He finishes shaving. He goes, come on. He goes, all right, mate. You know, like the same footage.
Yeah.
It worked really well. And we started filming this stuff and editing this nutty stuff together. And that, we started sending it out. And that went to production companies.
Where are you sending stuff out then around this time? Like, because this is obviously pre-YouTube and all of that stuff.
This is
so are you just
Royal
going,
Mail.
Yeah, are you going straight to TV channels or
this is
independent
production companies? Yeah, production companies. One of which, Radar, I'm sure it was Radar, had just done Banzai. Remember that show?
Yeah.
And Lee and, God, I can't remember all the guys there, got us in for a meeting and we were talking about these sketches and let's film some other stuff. And it kind of went from there, you know. I went off to, I was traveling around Europe and just, you know, another bonkers couple of years, debauched, you know.
Yeah.
But
are you just single, young, and having fun?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I got a call, or whatever, or my parents maybe let me know, you need to come back, you've got this.
You got a page.
Well, you've got smoke signal,
yeah.
Carrier pigeon, yeah. And they said, come back and do this like a screen test thing. And that was for a show called Experimental, I think, which was, which I don't know if that worked out. We were filming a sketch actually, and there was a camera like, in this taxi. The taxi driver was supposed to pick me up, and it was like a Ross Lee was in it. Ross, my mate Ross, who went on to Balls as well, was supposed to be a psychic, and he was picked up in a cab. And the guy said, stay away from people in, Ross said to the taxi driver, stay away from people in red t-shirts. So then the next pickup was me in a red t-shirt. Ha, ha, ha. Right? But the camera fell off. I remember that. This was the first time I've done hidden camera, right? Properly.
So this is full on. This isn't a sketch. This is hidden camera.
This is the TV. This is Channel 4. And the camera was there. And he said, just be a bit weird, you know. So I'm wearing this red t-shirt. He's like, oh, well, you won't believe what just happened. I had this guy say, stay away. And I was just acting really weird, you know, trying to freak him out. And the camera fell off. I was like, well, that's it then. You know, so.
Is that my door?
My door!
Let me just check the door. I see you want to open the can as well. Give me one sec.
Shall I answer it?
Yeah.
Hello there!
Hello, mate. Delivery? Yeah, what's that tip for? Yeah, I'm one, but I'll take it.
Okay.
Matt.
Stocks.
OCK. Yeah.
Me laughing at stocks! You never fucking heard of it!
Couldn't resist.
They're always getting shit delivered.
Right.
They're never in. Right, sorry about that, mate.
Open it and shit in it.
So, camera falls down.
Yeah, sorry, I'm waffling about that. It was just my first gig, you know, first major gig. And the camera fell down. I was like, oh, okay. So then I think I went back to blooming wherever I was, you know, repping, like, you know, holiday rep and all that.
Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Oh, yeah.
I bet you saw all sorts.
Yeah. Well, again, it's just me being a complete idiot and mucking around and getting in trouble and, oh, there's some ridiculous stuff. And I got another call, and it was from Lee. He said, oh, you know, I want you to come in and screen test for this thing. How would you be on a stage, you know? I said, I'll be all right. Okay, let's go for it. So they had me jumping on people's backs for this little screen test, whatever you call it, video. And they were like, yes, well done. You did very well. You jumped perfectly on his back or whatever it was. And
so was that your idea or was that
no,
their
that
idea?
No, that was their idea, yeah. Yeah, from there, it was
Urban Rodeo,
kind of a, yeah, Big Stranger Rodeo. That was obviously, I mean, Lee's a clever guy, you know, and he was like, I've got this Urban Sports thing. He's going to say, it's your name, Legends Urban Sports. Oh, we were going to call it Nutbag because he knew about the Nutbags.
The Nutbags, yeah.
It was going to be the Nutbag was the character. And they said, no, they would just use Ned, you know. And so I was jumping on this guy's back. They liked it. So it went to the series, got commissioned. And I'm like, okay, cool. This sounds good. This is what I've been waiting for, really.
Literally getting paid to fucking prank people.
Yeah, I mean, money was diabolical. But, you know, I'm like, let's do
this. The same old story with the Sanchez boys. It's just everyone thinks, oh, you must have made loads of money from those shows because they were so big and in everyone's like consciousness at that time.
No, not at all. I mean, no.
And there's no back end. There's none of that shit.
No, and it was the contracts, you know, were at the age where the YouTube was kind of embryonic, and so you got a buyout, so you're signing away everything
or your
subsequent now
quote unquote
millions
content, yeah.
Millions of YouTube views I don't get anything for, so there's that as well. But so we arranged, met the crew, great, I'm really excited, you know, hadn't filmed anything apart from that thing with the camera failed off, you know, properly. And so the first thing they wanted to do was, I'm sure it was the first thing, urban sprinting, right? You remember that one?
Mm-hmm. Where you go into the shop and you get the tag and then you run out to the nearest burger bar.
So, and we were there and it was a hot day like this, and it was somewhere, it was Fulham, somewhere like South London, somewhere like that. And there was a massive behemoth of a man, you know, like a security guard.
Yeah.
And they're like, right, so this is what you're going to do. You're going to go in, you're going to take a shoe, right? And that's going to set off the alarm, and he's going to then chase you and then you run off, right? Okay, you got it. Talked about it. So took the shoe, and I was this is nervy, you know, first time. I'm a little bit nervous.
Dude's massive
was my main issue. But
and he's not in on it.
No.
And we should clear this up as well, right? Yeah. All of these stunts, the people that you're pranking aren't in on it.
This is something I have a problem with. You know, these pranks. We spoke about this on the phone, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, like, pranksters, whatever you want to call them, the YouTube, you know, these guys.
The guy who's always stitching up his best mate.
Well,
I can't remember that guy's name. But they're all staged.
Yeah. This is it. When there's two people and the other guy's in on it, that's not prank, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that word.
It's
anyway.
A sketch, essentially,
it's,
isn't it?
It's a sketch, but people, you know, people are so stupid, or I don't know, if it's funny, it's funny, I suppose. But I do have a problem with that. And yeah, I would say 97.32156%. You know, percent of the stuff you see from mine is legit. You know, we film stuff where it's not necessarily worked. So, you know, we will use what's happened and then do another angle. So it's like me running the other way, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this stuff was real. And this, I'm telling you, this guy, right? So I'm taking the shoe and I'm like, okay, right, I'm going to go around him that way. Yeah. So I go through the thing. Beep, 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 beep. And he's just standing there.
Don't move.
He's like, just standing, you know, like, I don't think he was that bothered at that stage. I was like, come on in, you fucking prick, you know.
That's
that,
what you said to
yeah,
him,
all
yeah.
that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, I could send him. He was like, what? Sort of getting more and more worked up, you know. I was like, come on in, you've got to fucking chase me. You've got to fucking chase me. You know, saying nuts in front of him. And he wouldn't move. And I'm thinking, I've got to get this guy to move, right? So I threw the shoe at him. And it hit him. I'm a fucking good shot, as you know, right? In the face.
Face.
And then he went mental, right? So I ran. I mean, I'm much quicker then, but I ran. So this guy is chasing me down. Where the hell is this, mate? This high street, and I'm running. And I exit, and I'm like hiding somewhere. And I can hear this guy.
Like Jurassic Park.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy is freaking out, and I'm thinking, don't go back. And this is something I learned later on as well. It's best to wait, you know. And I was ringing the producer, no answer. I was like, shit, what the hell am I going to do? I'm just going to stand. I don't want to go back. And the first one, remember, this is the first sketch we ever shot. Bearing in mind, there's God knows how, but I think there's like 30-odd urban sports in total. And this one didn't go out. So he didn't basically what Mike rang me, the producer rang me, he said, like, come back, and he was like panting. He was like, look, you just come back. I was like, what the hell's happened? So I come back around the corner and he's like, the geezer went fucking mental. He won't sign. He grabbed me around the neck. Yeah, like he's gone off at the shop because we told him it was, you know, like he's not signing it. I was like, what have I got myself in for? You know? But I loved it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I absolutely loved the buzz. And
what a baptism of fire as well. Well, to not even get the footage at the end of it, you're like, that just gives you the extra drive.
I don't know how I can sort of put it. You're getting paid to fucking cause mischief. And you can't, well, although you do get nicked. I did get nicked, you know, a couple of times. But you can't really get in trouble. I'm supposed to be doing this. You know, it's that whole thing again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've got a note.
I've got a note. Yeah. And so we went from there. And then what we filmed next, I can't be sure, but. Yeah, we did the Urban Sprinting and the Rodeo and Make a Move. They were the first three for the first series. And it was, you know, it was only a few days shooting and the money was shit, but I really enjoyed it. Especially the nutty stuff. You know, that's what I've always been.
I was watching one the other night and you're in the mall and you're going, come on, fatty. And yeah. You're just like running loops that around was... this guy. You're going down the stairs, back up the stairs.
Yeah, that was series. No, that was series one, wasn't it? Or was it Urban Sprinting?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's fucking funny though.
Yeah.
Because as you and when you're doing the knock and don't run as well, like most people, I think in that situation after the first door slam would go, right, we've got the footage.
No.
You go back 2, 3, 4. You just keep going.
You know when something's going well, and I sort of became quite adept at because I'm a knob, right? And I've always been, you know, a troublemaker, and
Keep poking the tiger.
I do like, you know, that reaction, and it. And I kind of like, you know, then, you know, because he's cheeky with it, he's all right, you know. Because as a kid, I was cute, you know, so I could get away with it. Oh, it's, you know, it's but I wouldn't melt sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, Knock and Don't Run was a great one. That was quite scary because you're right, you know, you're in
people's
personal
you're
zone.
You're right there. It's their house.
But I don't know, like you sort of said earlier, like, it's ballsy. It's ballsy, but I'm not, I'm there, but I'm not. You kind of like zone out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just. I'm going to get this. And I know, you know, it's...
Did you ever get lamped?
Oh, yeah. Well, in that one you just mentioned, I got lamped on the Come With Fatty. That was that one, I think.
Yeah.
The geezer on the escalator.
Oh, yeah. The one, and he wasn't even anything to do with the shop or anything. No. He was just a random guy and he got you in a headlock.
He clumped me. He broke my nose.
Really?
Well, I had two black eyes. I mean, my nose has been broken 100 times, you know. and he went and he fucking floored me. Big bloke. And he went after he sort of calmed down and I had ice on my nose, you know, like... I mean, oh, sorry, mate, I've been unloading fucking Arctics out of the back. Like that.
Okay. You were just looking for the same excuse.
I could have done with him, you know, the week before on the... But, I mean, it was great fun.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Take us behind the scenes on some more of those sketches, your favourite ones to shoot and stuff that either went famously well or famously wrong.
I absolutely love the chucking food at people, man, yeah. because it's so ridiculous. It's so naughty. It's fucking funny. And they can't get to you, really.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that you've got the safety barrier of the car. Although, what did happen a few times is they'd throw... I mean, when we filmed in Australia, right? Because I did three series here in the UK.
Did they lap it up down there as well?
Yeah, they kind of... They're quite chilled, right? Yeah. Aussies are quite chilled.
Oh, so the reactions weren't as good.
Maybe not, but then they're also really sporty, aren't they? So
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty good shot, right?
Oh, I was watching one where all the guys started throwing stuff back over.
Yeah, that stuff. But the one we filmed here, and there were South Africans, right? Also equally as, you know, sporty and
physically agile.
What the fuck? One was, what the fuck? And picked up like this fucking chicken wing or whatever, and it like really hurt my side, and I was like, okay. But, you know, I've been hurt a lot. Yeah.
Worst injuries in the line of fire, in the line of duty?
I broke my... Most of them were in Australia. I broke my bone inside my thumb, and I had a hairline fracture in my hip.
How did you do those?
That was... I think that was shark attack.
Right.
Have you seen that one?
No, I don't think so.
So
what's in that?
So there's people... this guy's like on their paddle boards, whatever you call them, this was in Sydney, you know, in the sea, and I'm going, I've got a megaphone, fucking shark, get out, you prick. And I fell, and they chased me, and I fell, and I fucked myself up quite bad. And then the last shot we filmed in Australia, Series 2, Australia, it was a final thing, and because again, the OCD, I want to get it right, it's got to be perfect. I'm like, okay, let's do that again. So we'd already done the thing. Let's do that again. But I just want to, if he throws me that way, I'm talking to like the director, then I'll turn back into that shot and we'll get the, you know, I'm like.
Yeah, yeah. Because I can. You're I'm going like, above and beyond. Because
well,
you're almost cutting yourself. Yeah.
This is what I was doing. And I'm, okay, so if we do that and I'll run past there and the camera's there, it's going to look great. It's a great out. And then you can do the reverse replay. I'm like, good idea. So I said to the guy, and he was like, because he just. That night I was eating all this, it was in the greengrocers, it was all you can eat. So,
I remember that one.
Hello there, fucking, nom. And it's obviously the apples and stuff, points go up. And so I say, we're going to do that again. Like, this is what I mean about the end stuff. Sometimes we do an extra bit and then you cut that into the action, which is legit. So it was literally that. And he fucking decided to throw me over his stall. He just threw me and I twisted, and that was, shoulder was like, you know, out of place completely.
Yeah, yeah. Like, did you go lethal open. Weapon style and try and bang it?
No,
back
no, I see that. I never thought of that, and I'm questioning Mel Gibson's integrity there. Not the first person to do that, but you know. So yeah, I have been hurt, and it's legit. And you know, as you said, you go above and beyond, and it's not like I'm. Oh yeah, I'm fucking great at this. It's a commitment. You know, you want to do it properly, and that's another reason why you're looking at these guys sitting in their flat. Oh, look, my girlfriend's over there. She's asleep. Let's do...
Yeah.
She's not asleep.
And but as you say, people buy it. People buy it. And it's
and that's fine.
The standards, I think, just dropped so much, hasn't it?
Well, it's over
with that stuff.
It's oversaturated market, you know. And what happened after... Actually, I don't know if you want to talk about any more balls or... The
Well, what I wanted to ask you about balls is, do you form relationships with the other people on set, the other performers? Is there a lot of time when you're getting to know each other and bonding and...
Yeah, and I mean,
was there ever any talk of like crossing over? Was there much of that?
Well, the guys who series one wasn't so much because I was kind of in and out and you sort of chat, and I was only in those three sketches, so I wasn't on the actual set for very long. Series two got a bit more because that done okay, and people were like, "Who's this guy? This guy's fucking funny, right?" So I like that. That was nice. It's not again. It's not the fame. It doesn't interest me. It's just like being recognised. Okay, he's funny. That's I like that.
Yeah. Well, dude, whenever I meet people out and about and they go, "I listen to your podcast. I love it." It's just nice to know that your hard work has paid off and it's connecting
it. And
with people.
It's not, you know, ego or nepotism or anything. I think that sometimes gets confused, you know. I'm not like that. I mean, I hate to think anyone would think that. But, so series two, I met Tim Shaw for the first time, who I know you're aware of.
Love Tim Shaw.
And so do I. And we instantly hit it off. He's exactly the same as me, you know, the same.
Well, he was, I remember hearing stories. I joined Kerrang after he left, but I remember hearing stories about the levels that he would go to.
Absolutely.
To execute whatever prank or sketch he was trying to get across on air.
Yeah, he certainly did.
He was the gold standard in that office for audio editing and presentation style and He was just a very revered broadcaster in that building.
And I mean, and he was, you know, rewarded for that with the New York Gold, whatever you call them, you know, those. And I was part of that. And it was, you know, I got to know him quite quickly. And his missus at the time and my missus hit it off as well. So we, you know, he was like, come up to Birmingham. When, you know, and I was on Kerrang. I did some presenting with him and we filmed some bits, prank stuff, you know, because we were kind of in this prank thing now. That wasn't before, you know, this is what I mean. It was, I wanted to do sketches, which is something I'm now looking at, you know, 15 years on. So yeah, Tim and I are still very close. I liked pretty much everyone there, you know. It was just, everyone was buzzing because it was, and also you get that thing because there was 10 or so different comedians. Oh, I can't wait to see what you've, you know,
yeah,
your
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
So you'd go out
you're buzzing
and
for each other.
Yeah, it was nice. I got on, yeah, I got on well with, you know, Olivia, the Devil, they changed. Ross was on series one, Ross Lee, he's a good guy. Mark, the presenter, yeah, they're all kind of cool guys, you know. Yeah, it was good. It was a good, good. I was very fortunate to be part
of
that.
Any good staff parties?
Yeah, I mean,
Balls of Steel staff night out.
Well, it was kind of, again because there were so many of us. That didn't really happen, you know. But in Australia, that was a bit more, you know, because there would be smaller crews.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, Nedge's going over here, so we'd go and do, you know, we'd have drinks and stuff after, and that, you know, it's sunny and.
I love Australia so
oh,
much.
Man, me
what
too.
A country.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're just the best people as well, aren't they?
I absolutely love Australia. And I broke my shoulder the final day of filming that. Yeah. And then my son was one then. And we had planned like a tour
nice road
6
trip.
Weeks after. But it was okay. But yeah, it was great. I love that place too, man. It's beautiful.
Did having kids change your performance style in any way? Did it make you think twice about some of the more dangerous stuff? Does that shift happen inside you when you think, oh, I've got someone else to care for, not just me now?
Yeah, I don't know if that you're conscious of that as such, but it's certainly, you know, when you're standing there thinking, I'm probably going to get smacked for this one, what could go wrong? But no, I don't know. You either do it or you don't, you know, you're committed to this. Again, you know, I don't think I'd be sort of...
What's the worst that can happen kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I don't think I'd be sort of as keen to film some of that initial stuff now.
Well, that's an age thing as well, isn't it?
I think it must be. You know,
you're so fearless when you're younger in all aspects of life, I think.
But I just think it's like it's been done and I'm really proud of what we did, you know.
Well, and the other thing is the only way I can top it is by making it even more ridiculous and extreme, and then it gets dangerous, doesn't it?
You know, you just got ridiculous, yeah. And this is something, again, that Pritch was talking about. Obviously, I didn't mention them then, but yeah, Pritch and Panch became, you know, we were kindred spirits again, and I think he actually did mention this in the podcast. They would go to the pub. So, because they were together, so I'd be waiting on my own. You'd have like a rehearsal, then you'd have a couple of hours. And I'm like, come in for a couple of buttons. Tom Jones again.
Yeah.
All right. I'll meet you over.
Yeah. So we'd go and sit in the pub. And as again, he mentioned, Panch would, true to form. And there was one time, was he green on Sanchez?
Green. The incredible Alk is what they used to call it. Oh, I'm green.
So on Balls, I think he was a Smurf. Do you remember this?
No.
And he was blue. And he was fucking smashed. So he's completely blue. Pritch is like doubled over because we all had a few drinks, you know. Like, and me and Pritch, sensible-ish, right? Panch, yeah, forget it. And he was stumbling all over the place and he had to get back onto set. And he was falling over and there was blue like all over the walls, you know, because he's... And that's, yeah. But actually, I thought of this last night. Panch said to me, we were sitting down in this pub opposite the studio. My parents came, some of my mates come to sit in the audience. Nice. And someone said, oh, Sanchez boys, and Nedge, fucking hell, look at this. And he went, oh, it's the fifth Beatle, this one. It's about me. And that really made me happy, yeah, you know, because it sort of goes back to the whole thing. You know, so it was nice. Yeah, it was good times, man.
Did you ever get lonely performing on your own? Did you ever think, oh, I wish I had someone else to bounce off?
I'm very much like that. And I was not jealous of Pritch and Panch, but you could see it's easier because he was saying he was really nervous, you know, because they're going on and they hadn't really done anything like that before.
Like live TV, yeah.
Yeah. It gets a bit lonely, you know, but that's why you end up in the pub, I suppose. Well, it's not just boozing, it's just the social thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you can sit and then, you go on and come off. And I like, I mean, I've just written a sitcom as well. This is something else, you know, we're going down a different path here again, but. I've written a sitcom with my pal Joe, and that's really rewarding. For you, like, you know, like this, you know, you're sitting and you're bouncing off.
Yeah, man.
it can be quite lonely, you know, writing. But it depends what I'm writing. If I'm writing sketches, sometimes I'll just sit down. I've never really written anything longer than 3 minutes before.
You've written a whole series?
A pilot, and like breakdowns of episodes 2 to 6.
What can you tell us about that? Or nothing at this stage?
Probably nothing.
You feeling good about it though?
I think I'm really proud of it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's with a few production companies. Feedback's been good.
Great.
So then again, this is me maybe becoming a little bit more sensible. And you know what? I wanted to keep it because, I mean, I was thinking about this recently. Because I'm still, you know, we're still going. I'm still filming stuff. I've got to tell you about MTV as well in a minute. There's an American pilot that's out there doing rounds, hidden camera, that is. I've got other stuff going on. I've got another show that I'm pitching at the moment. But I just wanted to do something that wasn't...
Prove that you're not a one-trick pony.
Well, it's not just that. It's like everything in this... I was like, I'll send you my reel. And I was looking at it going, this is adult material, you know? And with the kids, I thought, let's write something that... When we were sitting, he was going, oh, he can say fuck off. I said, no. He doesn't have to say fuck anything. Let's just make it nice and... I don't want to say too much, sorry.
But, well, that's interesting, though, because I think this happens with creative people. When they do have kids, you almost want to make something that your kids can see and enjoy.
Well, maybe it is that as well, yeah. I've also, with my boy, we've started writing a kid's book. We just started, because he's real. I mean, he sits at night, he's writing stories. It's great, because that's what I used to do. And he binds them together using those string things, which is what I used to do.
I used to
go to mum's to find mine. So that's nice as well. You know, you get that. And he's a creative kid. Lila, the other one, is... She's like me. Yeah, like when I was 20, whatever.
The performing side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a real handful. But no, it's good. We're very blessed. Yeah, so the sitcom I've got high hopes for.
Nice.
Yeah, I was talking to Tom Davies about it, you know. Tom,
yeah.
But he's just in the middle of King Gary right now, so. But he said, they read the script, they liked it. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's good, mate. It's
just, would you like to perform in it, or is it just purely for other...
That's not a deal breaker. That's what I mean. It's not really about...
Because a lot of people do that, don't they? They write with the caveat that I'll play this character, because it's basically a way of them getting a role for themselves.
Not necessarily. I don't feel that's...
But you're happy to just get it made anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? There's a certain amount of satisfaction you get from creating something and then just watching it evolve in front of you. We've got my main business now is a street dance school that my missus and I run together, and that's really doing well. All Stars Academy, it's really thriving.
So you're a proper dancer, are you?
No, she is. No, but
so you're the business brains.
I started street dancing at 35, mate. So, but you know we're in it. We've like the nuttiness and the wigs and the costumes and the stupidity.
Oh, okay, right. And what age group's it for?
From 3 up to, I think, 51 we got. So
51, okay, wow.
They're all separated, so we've got...
Yeah. So how do people find out about that, then?
Well, yes, that's out in Essex. That's where we are.
Well, there might be people listening to this in Essex.
Well, you need to come down, then.
Yeah. So how do they find out? Where is it?
All Stars Academy.
Is there a website for it? Is there, like, a Facebook group?
Yeah, there's Facebook. And this is, again, something that is sort of... Well, she's an incredible talent, my missus, right? You know, she's...
How did you two meet?
We met on the on Footballers' Wives, right? Because I used to do extra work in between, you know, like, because it sounds like when you talk about projects, it's like, well, that was that year. That was, you know, there's always stuff going on, and I did extra work for a long time.
You've got to hustle the living, haven't
you? Absolutely, and that's how I met.
Can't just wait for the work to come in.
So on Footballers' Wives, I joined an extra agency, and they were like, you're good for Footballers' Wives, you know, I had the stupid hair. So I went on that. That was great day's work. You know, you get like, 200 quid, you sit down on a bus for half the day, you get up, you have a game of football, you have a pretend champagne, you know, a meal with the guys, and you're just talking to girls all day. It was brilliant. And I saw her, I was like, hello. And she's got a boyfriend, isn't it? Okay, fine. And then I did a shoot on The Bill. It was a night shoot. It was where in this club where this balcony falls down or something. I'd never really watched The Bill. But and there was... quite a few of us there, and I saw her, and we sort of...
So she was doing extra work as well? Yeah.
And we hit it off straight away. I was like, hello.
Is the boyfriend still on the scene? She's like, no, he's gone. You're like, woohoo.
Well, yeah-ish. But, she's, you know, we're all punching, aren't we? She's...
always.
She's amazing. So, and we get the week after that, actually, on The Bill, we were just chatting. I was like, really like this one, you know? way out of my league, but you know, they all are, aren't they? And there was a Channel 4.
The ones worth chasing, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a channel, well, I did the cheeky, I just grabbed her phone and put my number in and rang it, and that was it. But the there was a Channel 4 kids show the week after. They were, you know, are you free to come and do this? It's a dance. This is like some of the behind the scenes stuff again. So I used to do EastEnders as well. That's really interesting. But the there's this club scene, and when you film these scenes, right, there's no music, or it's like really, so you have to pretend to dance. This this is why, like on EastEnders, they're like, they're talking like we are, but the music, but you wouldn't be able to do that. Yeah. It's stupid. So we're like pretending to dance and mucking around, and they were like, well, we need people to kiss. So, well, I didn't know this at the time, but I had said I would only kiss her, and she had said to the agent she would only kiss me. Oh, isn't that nice?
Destiny, right?
So, yeah, our first kiss was on camera.
On EastEnders in the background.
No, on the Queen Vic, the show, in the bill. But no, we did that after. We would get work kissing couple, mate. I mean, turn up, you do like 2 hours, £300 each to snog. Amazing, isn't it?
Mate, that's a love story and a half.
Brilliant. So that, I mean, we were still doing stuff like that, and I was, you know, this was around the time of Balls, because, you know, again, you're not earning megabucks. You've still got to pay the way. And then after Balls, Series 3, and that was kind of like, we sort of knew that was it. We were talking about a spin-off show, and Ned, do you want to do this? And I was writing a Ned's Urban Olympics was the idea I had. And then Channel 4 was sort of interested in it, and then it's really tough, you know, like you spend quite a long time writing a project. I know you know this too. And then, are we doing this? It's kind of like, oh, he's left now. Can you want to speak to this? You know?
Yeah.
So we push it, and everyone I spoke to was like, Ned's Urban Olympics, brilliant idea. Because it was coming up 2012, you know, it was that year. So it would have been perfect. So it's going to be me up against either me playing other incarnations of me as foreign, you know, international Ned's, whatever. Or me going up against people from around the world, which I thought was funny, doing urban sports. And then Channel 4 was sort of hesitant on it. Maybe E4, and it kind of fizzled out. But then I got a call from, I was doing an advert or a documentary. I did an advert and a documentary in Canada, right? So I flew to Toronto. I was flying to Toronto to film this thing. It was about shoplifting, so they'd seen urban sprinting, and they wanted to use that as like a throwaway bit in the middle of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would go over there and interview some people. It was really good fun. So just about 3 weeks or so, 2 weeks before I go, I get this call from, or an email, whatever it was. You know, and we're into current age now. It's not necessarily smoke signals and telegram.
Yeah,
There's a telegram for you, sir.
It's the World Wide Web now is in full effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said, hi, Ned, you know, my name's Jim. I'm a massive fan of your work. You know, you're hilarious. Oh, it's nice to hear. Can you get to Toronto, right? Because I want to pitch a show with you in to MTV. I was like, mate, I'm coming in 10 days, 9 days, whatever it was. And he was like, what? So I'm very much believing serendipity, and, you know, like there's a path that you need to sort of trust the universe, right?
Yeah, man.
This is awesome. And some of this stuff recently, which we might come to, I don't know, is mind-boggling, but... So I go to Toronto, film this thing. This guy, Jim's there, like, I can't believe this is so odd. You know, how have we managed to do this? He goes, look, I want to shoot something with you and get it. I reckon we get a series away. So that was like about 18 months with other projects going on. Of work. Actually, there wasn't other projects going on because I wasn't allowed to. But let's not go into that. I was coming up. I had new characters. We were coming up with other new characters. Back and forth to New York and Toronto. We filmed two different pilots. This is where David Hock was in, I think, the first time. We had all kinds of crazy stuff. Ronald McDonald, which is essentially, I like the reality behind these things. So Ronald McDonald, you don't see him. You go into McDonald's now, some of these kids don't know who it is.
He's
not on the wall. When we were kids, right?
It's not the done thing now to make McDonald's seem exciting to kids, right? Because it's like, we've got to give them healthy diets now. No more fast food.
Well, it was the clown, wasn't it? And Hamburglar and that purple thing, right?
Yeah.
So I just thought, Ronald McDonald, he's...
like an out of work.
Well, yeah, he's...
washed
so,
up.
So, it was, so the gag was, and I know there's some other stuff like this on YouTube, but this is 100%, I'm telling you, this was my idea, this, yeah? Go into Burger King and order like a Whopper. And then the king comes down, what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we had this brawl. So that was a great sketch, man, and people were stopping, and it was just when Twitter had started. So, and there was tweets about it, and I remember we made the paper, and so Ronald McDonald and Burger King in the middle of, I can't remember the name of the square there.
Times Square?
No, in Toronto this was. Can't remember it. Anyway, and then the Colonel Sanders come along as well. What the fuck, get out of here! So there was a big, brilliant. It was great. And it was a really nice, well thought out sketch. It was executed well, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
who was the guy that did the real life Mario Kart race? Did you see that?
The French fella.
Fantastic.
Oh, I can't remember his name.
You know exactly what I mean though, right?
I do, yeah, yeah.
Genius.
There's some good stuff he did.
I love stuff like that, like full scale real life.
Absolutely.
Brand recreation.
Yeah.
And Dom Jolly was obviously big into a lot of that kind of style.
Well, I think Dom had an issue
well.
With him, didn't he? I can't remember the guy's name now.
Yeah, well, he used to nick a lot of Dom's stuff, yeah. Basically.
I mean, this is another thing. It happens quite a lot, you know.
Well, it's intellectual property in that world is very hard. Like with stand-ups and jokes, you know, people would go to clubs, steal jokes from up-and-coming comedians, use them, and it's hard to prove all that is mine.
Yeah, you can't copyright an idea is what I've been told, you know, unless it's literally, you know, just the plagiarism is obvious. That's what I've been told, you know, because this happens a lot. And, you know, it's kind of flattering in a way as well, but some of these young
Well, they
guys,
do say imitation is the highest form of flattery, don't they? But then they're like, well, he's making money off my idea.
Well, that's exactly what's happening. And it's fine, you know, let him do. But, you know, there's stuff I've done that I'm watching. And some people send it to me going, have you seen this? I'm like, well, have a look at this. I did that first. They're like, oh, right, okay. But that's fine.
Have you ever had anything where TV companies or production companies have said after the show that you've done, like, we own the rights to that character? Or do you...
No.
I mean, say someone like, you know, just the classic Nedge Cowboy. Is that definitely yours or is it... It's not definitely yours,
because it's me, isn't it? You know, so they own the footage. But we've shot some other stuff, you know, and we've done that.
They wouldn't then go and try and sue you if you were shooting new stuff as that character?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, going back to the MTV thing, that was brilliant, you know. We shot for 18 months or so, and then they were pitching, and MTV said, yeah, we're gonna go for this, right? So it was done. You're moving to LA, it was to start with. We're gonna film the first pilot, the first actual TX show will be in Vegas, right? So it was like me and Azorb coming down the strip. This is like the opening. Well, the opening was, you know, that see-through kind of arc bridge thing that over Grand Canyon where you look down.
Yeah.
So it was going to be that. The first shot was that, me coming out and they have like the guides, and I was going to wet myself and all this stuff. And that was like, Nedge, you know, cold open, then Nedge. And I would be traveling around America in Azorb, right? Okay. And so that was our in. And they were like, yeah, this is great. Kind of just for some reason, in fact, I know why. It was the, I don't know if I'm actually allowed to say this, but I'm going to anyway.
The Dudesons,
you know,
I told you.
The Dudesons had a show on MTV that massively bombed. And they said, oh, even though the contracts were signed, I don't know how this happened. My agent must have, you know,
dropped the ball.
Well, I don't know, man. But they said, we can't go forward with this now. And I was like, that was 18 months of work. So that was really difficult to take.
Yeah, I'll
because I couldn't really do any other work during that period. The contract was a bit weird, but
did you get paid for the work?
No. So that was tough. And then the missus was like, "Look, that's it. You know, this you've got to start thinking what." I said, "Well, you know, this what have I done wrong? You know, we got the show, we got commissioned." So didn't work out. So I kind of like was thinking, right, maybe there's something else. And we were still doing the live shows at this point, so and that the money in that can keep you going.
Yeah.
So we'd go out and do like literally food fight on stage, you know, like so it'd be Burger Bowl off on stage, and then I'd do, you know, make a move like go mental, and then you'd have the students up there. It's great fun. And that was really good fun. That was with Nathan, the guy I told you about earlier. He'd come out and DJ and tour manage. It was like a set. It was organized chaos, a lot of, you know, this organized chaos.
It was probably more organized than the Sanchez live shows.
Well, quite possibly. You know, we'd have like three, we're going to do that, and there was like a, you know, that's Nate played the theme track. You know, it was like in order, and great fun. Got messy and stuff. I'll tell you what, the first one, this is a good story. So the first gig, before I did it with Nate, did it with another mate of mine, Matt, and we went up to Newcastle, right? First ever Nedges Urban Sport live night, whatever you call it. Newcastle, can't remember the name of the bar. We were thinking of ideas. I'm like, okay, I want to do something that's, you know, really out there. I want to do Nedges Urban Shitting, right? So essentially, I had two cat litter trays and like a toilet roll each. And there was cat litter in the tray, you know, and it was two people come up on stage and I'd record it like, right, here's how you play Nedges Urban Shitting. We need two fucking pricks to come on stage and shit as quickly as you can. Simple, you know? So that, we did that. And my mate's going, oh, he's doing it. And
if ever there was a city to do it in, it's Newcastle.
Well, you know what? That did cross my mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you know what I mean? And I thought, this is either going to go one or two ways. It was brilliant. And then this guy sort of stumbles up on stage and he's like, just didn't say anything, just shat in this...
No, didn't even say a word. Brilliant.
He didn't say anything. He just did it. And then I was just looking at my pal and we had cleared it with the club, right? Well, that's what, you know, he got a bit funny after. So he did this dump. And it looked like a cat poo because I don't think he really needed one. I remember thinking, you know, like it was like a little one. Wiped his bum and then went back into the audience and gave him like a bottle of, you know, fizz from the bar as his prize and a cowboy hat. Right, go on, do one. And and Nicky Butt was there. You know Nicky Butt, the footballer?
No, I don't think so. I recognise the name.
Manchester United, Newcastle.
Right.
And apparently his wife got quite upset.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff grosses people out big time, doesn't it?
Well, I actually didn't think anyone was going to do it.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like buzzing. I thought they'll come up and bluff, but this guy just did one. And that was the first gig. And then we got banned from the circuit for a year. Because, you know, you can see the similarities between us and what the Sanchez
happened with the boys as well. Yeah. Yeah. They got banned. And then once you do, that's your income gone, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the first one. So, you know, but it was after that. We got going again, and we didn't do urban shitting again.
Yeah, that's
gone.
We
stuck to the main sort of things, which were, it was good laugh, mate. But yeah, so the MTV, and it bummed me out. Obviously, that was still going on, but the MTV thing really, really hurt. And, you know, so I was thinking...
Well, as you say, it's the pressure from, not the pressure, but it's the conversation that you have with your partner at that point where she's like, we've got kids, we've got bills.
Well, we didn't have kids at that point.
Okay.
But what happened was they flew us to Vegas, the production company, bless them. You know, we'd all lost out here. And I'm still really good friends with a lot of these guys, Jim especially. Go to Vegas. We had 4 days in Vegas. We just had fun. And we actually conceived Leo there.
Oh, so there you go.
So now I'm very much thinking, you know, okay.
That's the definition of every cloud has a silver lining.
Mate, yeah, what an experience, you know. So, and being a dad is amazing, you know. It's fucking difficult, man, and they're a real handful, but they're great. So yeah, and then Balls Australia rang, so it went from there. I was like, I'm not doing it, you know, because he's just, I'm always getting injured or, you know, just disappointed. I was like, no, let's do it and have some fun. And I'm glad I did, because again, like, what an amazing place. And yeah, I really enjoyed shooting in Australia. That was ridiculous. And it broke records and stuff out there, the show. It was the most watched show ever on the channel.
Really?
Yeah.
Love it. Did you do any live shows over there?
No. And we were talking about that, actually. It never came to anything. I think we probably missed the boat now. But, I mean, you know, are you doing any more balls still? Are you doing any more? I don't think I would. We filmed two other things. We did a Halloween bowl-off and an American bowl-off. Because what I did was, last year, we went back to the States and independently produced a lot of what we filmed before. And that's sort of recently been finished, so that's what I'm pitching.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's a lot of the new characters, like David Hawk I told you about, and Ronald made an appearance again. Annie the Tranny, because we didn't talk about Annie. You know about Annie, right?
Is that something which you receive criticism for into today's?
I think...
Because is it a sympathetic portrayal? Is it... I don't know the character.
It's... So,
because that word is now seen as an offensive word by a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't, you know, I can't really be dealing with, you can't say anything, you can't do anything, you know what I mean? It's
well, I've got a couple of transsexual friends, and one of them wrote a book, and it was called Tranny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, the reception I've had from transsexuals, I mean, there's so many transgenders, there's so many different...
Trans, pans.
And even they themselves go, it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, in fact,
we, you know, I've got quite a few gay pals and they've said, this is hilarious, you know. Like, I don't know.
Funny's funny, isn't it?
Funny's funny. You've got to leave it alone. It's not those people that are complaining about this.
Yes, and they're trying to make
these Gen Z guys, like, well, you can't say that. This is racist. That's, what are you talking about? It's comedy. And Ricky Gervais puts it really well on Twitter. I mean, he's great
on Twitter.
He's
the master of it, yeah.
You know, just get on with it. You've got to learn to laugh at stuff. And Annie is... I mean, Annie.
Well, it goes back to you at school, non-uniform day in the dress.
Well, this is it,
right?
And we the guy at All Stars, you know, at the street dance, we got this. Our show was last week; it was fantastic. We got 150 students now, and we did a big show at Bishop Stortford, and we were all, you know, it's like panto. We're all dressed up,
yes,
women and stuff,
yeah.
It's great fun. You know, it's just comedy. But Annie, yeah, that, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think it's funny? Because I mean, it bloody was very popular.
I haven't seen the sketch. I need to see the sketch.
There's a guy. See, again, going back to what's real, what's a real prank? This is fake. Oh, that's fake. That's fake. So it was me and, well, me as Annie, and then a couple of the guys from Troll Station, right? So the black guy that comes up, he's in on it, okay? And this was a source of much sort of, you know, criticism at one point.
Right.
But we're doing the, it's like live theatre. We're doing the prank, yeah? The audience are there. There's like 20, 30, 40 people around. That's the reactions. That's the comedy, right? So just to clarify.
Well, no, because it's a very subtle difference, but an important one, isn't it? Is you can have someone in on the prank, but they're not the butt of the joke.
It was just trying, and it was, you know, showing that the black guy's ignorant, you know, saying, you know, look at you, disgusting. And it was just like, it's funny, but there is a message there. And a lot of, you know, and then I grab him and, what are you saying, you fucking... And but the first we filmed that before, and it was about my pal walked past and slaps Annie's bum, and then Annie flies into a rage at the wrong person. So there's your gag, you know, like just people waiting at a bus stop. How dare you? You just touched my bottom, that kind of thing, you know. There's the comedy in that, right? But I had a lot of messages from trans people saying thank you. You know, not only have you sort of made it okay,
yeah,
it's. This is my point, right? If these people, you know, trans or whatever, you know, I can't, there's so many different pockets. I'm struggling to sort of where do you
vocalized?
Well, it's ridiculous.
I guess just LGBT.
Well, yeah, okay,
and others.
But then,
yeah,
you're missing out, people. Still, it's got to the point now where and I hate to think that I can't, you know, I'm upsetting someone or offending someone. It's comedy.
I think every good joke should offend someone. Like, if you're not offending anyone, are you saying anything?
Well, I'm adopted, as I've told you, right? How many jokes are there about adopted? I don't fly off the handle. Well, you can't say that. You can say whatever you want. This is what's so great about the freedom of speech. And, you know, well, you're getting nicked because he called me a whatever on... It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's got to the point now where, you know...
Well, it's funny because, you know, the big thing at the moment is mental health. And, you know, my mum's bipolar and I've grown up with, you know, that disease is very much a part of my day-to-day life. And yet people are still completely fine with terms like nutter, mental, crazy. And I'm not offended by any of those words. I'm not like, oh my God, how dare you? Do you know what I mean? It's like, they're just words.
This is what I'm talking about. Exactly. It's not, and yeah, Ricky puts it really well. But, you know, I think you're right. I think every good bit of comedy, someone's going to have a problem with anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean,
otherwise it's fucking Mrs. Brown's boys.
But I mean, there's still, that is offensive to Irish people, right?
So it's a
funny one. But what we did in America, we took Annie into a water park, and she's on the slide and her balloons fall out. My tits. So, you know, yes, we're pushing a boundary here. Also, I did her breastfeeding. You haven't seen this one either. So she's got a balloon filled with milk. And can I sit down here? Can I feed my baby? Right. And she's like, oh, go for it. That's okay.
Well, that's, again, a very hot topic at the moment, isn't it? As people are saying, where women can
breastfeed.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's part of the reason why I wanted to do it. And she's like, oh, my God. There's like four girls. And they're like, oh, my God. And then I've got like a pin, like a cocktail stick at the end, and it pops. And I didn't realize it would, it went all over her. It's a great prank, right? Again, are we pushing the boundaries? Probably. Is that a good thing? Yes. You know?
Yeah.
We want viral out of this, you know? This is what you're doing now. So yeah, you know, and he's great, but is it going to get to the point where everything is uploaded, is going to get, you know,
reported and taken down?
Is it?
I worry about that, mate. I worry about books being taken off the shelves, like, you know, because people are...
In retrospect,
people are talking about, right, we need to remove all of Michael Jackson's CDs. And it's like, what, are we then going to remove Lolita from all libraries because that's a book about paedophilia as well? And then we're then in a world then where we are banning art. And that's a totalitarian fucking dictatorship.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, mate. You know, we're just out here to make people laugh. And the thing is, you know, you don't want to segregate people, right? These, whoever it is, we all are human beings. You all want to be seen
as one. That's
what I think.
Well, the minute you label someone as different, it's isolating them.
Well, there you go then. So why aren't, you know, I allowed to be a transgender character? Because transgender characters exist.
Yeah.
Surely by
And they also have senses of humour.
Right.
You would
hope. This is the thing. They, like, yeah, well, the message people. I've had. But if I say, well, I can't do that, isn't that, you know,
it's whitewashing comedy, yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. So I'm not gonna stop doing any of that stuff.
Good.
But it's just the time now, you know, like being a dad and with the businesses, you know, we spoke about earlier. I would like to definitely film some more stuff. You know, hopefully we'll get this pilot's going to get picked up. But it's just time. This is, I'm finding, as you get older, there's no time. Because you want to be a good dad. You want to, you know, the business is doing well. You want to be a good
husband.
And, you know.
See, I'm in a fortunate position that I don't have a partner or kids. So it allows me to run around doing podcasts. And I do think that, you know, if you want to be a creative out on your own, like, you kind of have to just be out on your own for the first, like, until you break. Do you know what I mean? Until you can establish yourself. But I guess we should wrap soon, should we?
I'm just looking through these notes that I wrote because I know you said don't, but I just wanted to make sure I didn't not cover anything.
Well, we can always do a part two, matey.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to come back. There's plenty more in the tank. This is what people say. You know, you're still filming. Yes, there's still, it just
and
takes.
Where do people go if they want to get up to date with everything that's going
on?
You've got the YouTube and the Facebook,
the YouTube,
right?
World and Edge, yeah, that started. We've been doing that for a while, World and Edge on YouTube. And the Facebook is just my name. It's just Nedge Dupre, D-U-P.
And that is your real name, isn't it?
Nedge, yeah.
Just Nedge.
Yeah, Nedge James Dupre. There's a massively, well, this is the adoption thing. You know, it's a huge story behind that. Maybe we leave that for another time.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because
next time.
It's a complicated thing. I've got family in Italy and stuff, so it's weird. Maybe that is another one.
Yeah.
Because we're just starting to look into that now.
Oh, really? So have you never met your biological parents before?
No. So I'm looking into this now, and I did a charity match with Danny Dyer recently.
Yeah.
A charity football game for this girl, Isla Caton, who's not been very well. She's quite a dear cause to my heart. It's a West Ham kind of thing, and Danny Dyer was there. And I was speaking to him about it, and he's, because he did, you know, who do you think? I was like, fucking hell, mate, yeah, give him a fucking bell, you know. So I think, yeah, this is, but maybe we leave that because it's sort of at the start of another journey, I find. But it's exciting as well. But I think I might want to film it.
Yeah, you definitely should.
It's just sort of starting.
For your own purposes, if nothing else. But I mean, with anything like, all people I think want to see now from my point of view, at least, is something that's truthful and something that's emotive.
Yeah.
And it's real, because there's so much bullshit on the box nowadays. I feel like that golden age of really emotive, personal television.
Yeah, and this is certainly it.
Is dying.
And it's even weirder and more complicated than that, but I don't want to start this at the end because it's going to...
I can see the OCD's tweet.
Well, no, yeah, because it doesn't cut right, you see?
It's a teaser.
Let's tease that.
For part two.
But there's plenty more, you know, there's loads going on. Yeah, look up the Facebook. I've been really slack with it because we've been so busy with the other things. But yeah, things are happening, still bubbling away. All good, yeah.
Right on, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure, thanks for the invite, mate.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let you love what I thought it was money. You came along and moved me, honey. I've changed my mind, this love is fine. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. Kisses the baby, feels good. Hold me, baby. Well, I want to love you like I love a shoe.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.